Hey, it's Austin James. If you're like me, trying to live your best life while living with diabetes, you can relate to worrying if you're doing a good job managing your diabetes. I use the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor to get real-time glucose readings and see the impact of every meal and activity to make better decisions. The FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor can help me live life with diabetes on my own terms, and it gives me more time for the things I love, like being a dad and a musician. Now this is progress. Learn more at FreeStyleLibre.us.
For prescription only, safety info found at FreeStyleLibre.us.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
It's the final Football Friday of the year. As we welcome you to the Early Line live right here on Sports Grid, he is Jervin Airey. I am Ben Stevens. You are watching all across the Sports Grid network, and that includes sportsgrid.com/watch, where you can find your favorite destination to consume everything all across the grid. A bittersweet Football Friday. Bitter, of course, because it is our final one of this 2024 NFL campaign, as the Super Bowl countdown has now reached only 2 days from Super Bowl Sunday and Super Bowl 59 in the Big Easy between the Chiefs and the Eagles. But sweet, because we get to preview and break down and give you some best bets for the biggest game of each and every football season, frankly, each and every year on the sporting calendar. We get you ready for Super Bowl 59. The side, the total, who wins a Lombardi Trophy, who wins a Super Bowl MVP, and those individual players that will impact the outcome. And because it is a Super Bowl with the most robust betting markets you could ever hope for a single football game, we'll have some fun entering this Super Bowl weekend as well. Joe, a lot to get to here over these 3 hours up until 11 a.m. Eastern.
I'm glad, Ben, because I've come up with a dozen new ways to bet this game coming up on Sunday. Again, just adding to the already ridiculous amount of bets I've got going for it. So let's keep it rolling. Push all in here today.
I hope we find some more over these 3 hours. We'll have Mike Blewett on the show in our second hour. We'll check in with the gang in New Orleans, of course, there on Radio Row for our Sports Grid coverage of Super Bowl 59. And we'll end out the show with our final pick six of our final Football Friday of this season. Yesterday, on a Thursday night in New Orleans, the NFL honors the award show that crowns awards like the MVP, Offensive and Defensive Player of the Year, Rookies of the Year, Coaches of the Year, so on and so forth. And Joe, a rather surprising MVP honor awarded last night to Buffalo's quarterback, Josh Allen. Not overly surprising if you see the history that Allen made throughout this 2024 NFL season, what he did for Buffalo single-handedly to lead the Bills to a fifth consecutive AFC East divisional crown. But surprising, Joe, because for the first time since 1987, the winner of the NFL MVP award was not named the first team all pro quarterback, or at least on that first team all pro. It was Lamar Jackson. So Josh Allen, a slight stunner in the Big Easy to win the first NFL MVP award of his NFL career.
Yeah, and the closest to date, right, as far as the voting goes, with the, what, the 50 members, I believe, of the AP press or something along those lines where they get it. Bottom line here, Ben, if this was surprising to anybody, it's a popularity contest. I did all of these votes are all popularity yes. contests. The one guy, the former NFL player that ended up listing him fourth on his ballot was probably the funniest thing I've seen in a long time. Yes. But you know you're always going to get that one dude in these voting situations, Ben, that just goes off the rails and goes outside. But listen, it's not like it wasn't deserved. So, you know, kudos right. to him. And listen, Lamar, you'll have an opportunity for many, many more of these to add to the mental before it's all said and done.
27 first-place votes for Josh Allen, 23 for the reigning MVP in Lamar Jackson, at least reigning entering last night. The closest MVP race we have seen in nearly a decade since 2016. We'll have more on that in just a little bit. But we also had other awards to hand out last night. Minnesota's Kevin O'Connell in a tightly contested Coach of the Year race. He wins Coach of the Year over Detroit's Dan Campbell. Not really tight in terms of Offensive Player of the Year. That was Saquon Barkley, winning that in his first year as a Philadelphia Eagle. Also, the Hall of Fame class for 2025 announced. Only a four-person class, our smallest list, joining Canton, Ohio since 2005. And notice who is not on there. That would be former Giants quarterback and two-time Super Bowl-winning QB Eli Manning. Did not make it into the Hall of Fame in his first year, eligible for Hall of Fame consideration.
That's a little shocking, man. Not gonna lie. I mean, I was a little miffed that that was how. I thought for sure just having the last name Manning guaranteed that he'd be on it, but. As we're sitting here, Ben, I am sure it will not be many, many, many years before his name is on that list. So you just didn't get it the first time out.
The great debate via stats, is Eli Manning a Hall of Fame quarterback? His win-loss record, all of that based on the hardware, the Lombardi trophies. Of course, that gives him the advantage. I, like you, Joe, believe that Eli Manning will be in the Hall of Fame, just not a first ballot. Not as robust of a trade deadline day as maybe we had assumed. All of the big chaotic blockbusters earlier in the week. One move, DeAndre Hunter, now makes his way to the NBA's best team, that being the Cleveland Cavaliers. That kind of highlighted what we actually saw before yesterday's deadline at 3 p.m. Eastern.
Yeah, and we kind of thought most of anything that was left over that might happen yesterday, Ben, was going to be just, you know, arranging the books, if you will, with some teams, but usually not anybody within contention. And that's kind of what we saw there yesterday.
Yeah, we had a couple of things like Yusuf Nurkic making his way to the Charlotte Hornets, things like of that nature. But again, the big splashes in a chaotic deadline week happened just a little bit earlier. That includes two teams that squared off last night in Los Angeles, the Lakers in the acquisition of Luka Doncic, the Warriors preparing to add Jimmy Butler to the fold. And as the Lakers await Luka's debut, LeBron's like, don't worry, guys, I got this. 42 points, 17 boards, 8 dimes for the 40-year-old LeBron James, as the Lakers edge out the Golden State Warriors at home last night, 120-112. LeBron's 42-point performance, better than that of Steph Curry's 37-point performance in L.A. last night.
Yeah, I mean, it was that. Sign me up for that battle every time. Enjoy it while you still can. I mean, LeBron versus Steph last night was over the top. I mean, Steph doing everything in his power as usual to counteract what the Lakers were doing. And LeBron ultimately at the end was just like, yeah, enough of this here. Both Butler and Doncic, ironically, in the building there last night, which was pretty funny, too, as well. But LeBron, 42 at 40 years of age. Wow, pretty impressive stuff.
Two players in NBA history, Joe, have scored 40-plus in a game at the age of 40 years old or older. Wouldn't you know, LeBron and Michael Jordan. Elsewhere in the NBA yesterday, the Dallas Mavericks win outright in Boston as a 12-point road underdog. 127-120, a 25-point performance out of Klay Thompson.
Again, we talked about this on the show yesterday, and no way can Boston be trusted as a double-digit favorite or anywhere near it at any particular point here. And it ended up, not only did they not cover, they lost outright last night.
19-29-1 against the spread as the favorite side for the reigning champs in the C's. Some college basketball news. Mike Woodson not going to return to Bloomington as Indiana's head coach next season. Surprise, surprise.
Shocked. Speechless, Ben. Speechless.
Yeah, things are bad right now for IU basketball turning into a football school. Virginia McCaskey, the principal owner of the Chicago Bears, passes away at 102 years old. The daughter of Papa Bear, George Halas, the owner and the founder of the Bears organization, had been the owner since 1983. May she rest in peace. We go to the honors yesterday in New Orleans around the NFL. Next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
The Super Bowl countdown for Super Bowl Sunday is now just two days away from Super Bowl 59 between Kansas City and Philadelphia in the Big Easy. But in the hoopla of Super Bowl week, last night also a critical one in New Orleans, the NFL Honors, where we hand out all the awards that we can bet on and discuss all season long in the National Football League. And of course, Joe, the biggest award each and every year, the most valuable player. In this year's MVP honor, tightly contested between two guys, two quarterbacks, Baltimore's Lamar Jackson, Buffalo's Josh Allen, a historic MVP handed out last night, not just the closest MVP race we have seen in nearly a decade since 2016, Josh Allen, 27 first place votes, Lamar Jackson, 23 first place votes, Josh Allen becomes the first winner of the NFL MVP award since 1987 that won the award by himself. So a solo MVP winner in the National Football League to not be named a first team NFL All-Pro, because that designation on the AP All-Pro first team at the quarterback spot was the reigning MVP in Lamar Jackson. Joe, I don't think it's overly shocking to see Josh Allen win the NFL MVP award. He is more than deserving of it. He made history time and again throughout this season with the Buffalo Bills. But I do believe, based on the trends and what we knew from being that first team All-Pro quarterback, and the idea that the same people that vote for the All-Pro teams also vote for the MVP award, I do believe it was a little bit stunning to see Josh Allen end with the MVP hardware and not Lamar Jackson.
It's so funny because the same group, Ben, if I'm correct here, that bets on the All-Pro is the same group that bets on the MVP, which basically means there were a handful of guys that ended up voting Lamar All-Pro but voted Josh Allen the MVP, which is quite honestly, if it was a two-horse race, some guys are of that mindset where, well, if I'm, Lamar, if I'm not voting for Lamar for MVP, I'm voting him all pro, and that's how they justify it. So, again, this is nothing more than a popularity contest. The bottom line to me is that both guys were deserving. Both guys deserve, like, Lamar was deserving of the all pro, and, of course, Josh Allen was certainly deserving of the MVP. At the end of the day, if you ask both of those guys, would you rather be playing Sunday or, holding up the hardware, Ben? I think we both know what the answer is to that.
Yes, absolutely. There is no doubt about that. And of course, the MVP award is only designated by your regular season performance. Now, there were some that thought Lamar Jackson got snubbed, that he got gypped from his third MVP award in his NFL career. I would just say that, as Joe alluded to, it is a narrative award. And there is a thing we always discuss in terms of betting those season-long awards, whether it's in the NFL, the NBA, Major League Baseball, college football or basketball, called voter fatigue. They don't like to give out back-to-back MVP award honors unless they really can't find it somewhere else. Josh Allen deserving, but when you look at Lamar Jackson, he won the statistical battle, and frankly, it wasn't all that close. Lamar Jackson also making history last night in the NFL, becoming the first player in National Football League history, Joe, to have more passing yards, passing touchdowns, fewer interceptions, a higher completion percentage, more total rushing yards, a higher rushing yards average than that of the MVP winner. Lamar outdueled Josh from the statistical standpoint, but it is a narrative award. And for most of the season, Josh Allen was a favorite. Entering the year, Allen at an 8-1 price had the second best number, only behind Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, I mean, statistically, you throw it out the window. The bottom line is that these are two quarterbacks, Ben, that if we were drafting tomorrow to start a franchise, guess who would go number one and number two? In all likelihood, yep. Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson. So it was close all year long. Sure, some of the numbers were in favor of Lamar, but there is no doubt what Josh Allen was doing this season is more than worthy of consideration to be the MVP. And we know over the last couple of years when Lamar won it, that, you know, they're trying, these group of voters here, these 50 guys in the AP, they've been telling us for the last couple of years, they really wish they could have, they wanted to figure out a way to get Josh Allen an MVP. And this was the year that they decided this was the year that he can get it now.
First NFL MVP award of his career. And I think to Joe's point, it might seem like a contradiction. The same voters for the MVP and the All-Pro teams kind of crossed their lanes there, but they were probably thinking, well, we'll give one guy the distinction of first team All-Pro. We'll give the other guy the MVP award and make some history this year for the first time since 1987. I do believe Patrick Mahomes would still probably go first overall in drafting quarterbacks, but I do hear your point. Coach of the year, Kevin O'Connell, for what he did with Sam Darnold and the Minnesota Vikings, edging out Detroit's Dan Campbell. Saquon Barkley running away with Offensive Player of the Year. A 30-1 price on Barkley before the season got underway. How about Patrick Surtain the second for the Denver Broncos, winning Defensive Player of the Year? Tied for the 21st shortest number entering the year at 100-1. He becomes the first defensive back since Stephon Gilmore in 2019 to win the award. They, the only two defensive backs, Joe, since Troy Polamalu in 2010 to win Defensive Player of the Year. Often an edge rusher, maybe even a linebacker as of late. Some love for the corners last night in Pat Surtain the second.
Yeah, I did not see that one coming. And listen, I can make the argument for a few other guys that just might have deserved it just a bit more than Patrick Surtain. But again, popularity contest.
Trey Hendrickson of Cincinnati finished runner-up. Jaden Daniels had his name inscribed in the Offensive Rookie of the Year award pretty much by October. Jared Verse, the rookie for the Rams, wins Defensive Player of the Year, third shortest price entering this season. And Joe Burrow, the comeback player of the year, a plus 250 price. We'll talk Hall of Fame for 2025 and deadline day in the NBA next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
The NFL honors last night in the Big Easy in the lead up to Super Bowl Sunday, now just 2 days away. And also the designations of the 2025 Hall of Fame class in pro football. Who will join those busts in Canton, Ohio? Our smallest Hall of Fame class this year, Joe, in two decades since 2005. Here is the list. Eric Allen, in his 19th year of eligibility. Jared Allen, fifth year of eligibility. Antonio Gates making it to the Hall of Fame in his second year on the ballot. And Sterling Sharp, a seniors candidate, gets into the 2025 Hall of Fame class as well. Of course, many congratulations to each and every one of those individuals. Antonio Gates, he comes to mind always when you think of the great tight ends in the history of the National Football League, part of the revolution, if you will, of the tight end position. But Joe, it wasn't so much who made the Hall of Fame class for this year in 2025. It was a guy who was eligible for the first time that did not. Of course, Giants quarterback Eli Manning, a famous name in the sport, maybe one of the most recognizable faces right now around the National Football League for what he has done following the end of his playing days. Eli Manning, on the first ballot of his try of getting into Canton, not into the Hall of Fame just yet.
You know, it's so funny, Ben, because we knew this was going to be interesting the minute he became eligible, right? The argument has been ranging on even for like the last 5 years of his career. If you just look at the regular season in his career, he never led the NFL in a single regular season quarterback passing category, Ben, except for interceptions. Yeah. That's it. But when you look at what he did in the postseason, in the playoffs, and in the Super Bowl, it's not even close, Ben. So you have to weigh that. All right, average during the regular season, but under the biggest lights, the biggest games, nobody, and I mean absolutely nobody, has showed up like he did. Yeah. On two teams, by the way, that had no chance, according to everyone, of winning anything, much less beating the one and only Tom Brady and the Patriots. So, it's a tough argument. But again, he's going to get in. The idea that he didn't the first go around, well, if you would have had a couple of better regular seasons, we wouldn't be having this conversation, Ben.
And that really is what it comes down to, the regular season stats. Of course, in the past happy era, this generation of quarterbacks all was lucky enough to play in. The win-loss record overall in his career is not exactly a quarterback stat, but it is the stat we apply really only to quarterbacks in the sport of football. There you see the numbers. The two most important numbers are in the middle of that screen. A two-time Super Bowl champion in the 2007 and 2012 NFL campaigns, and of course winning the Super Bowl MVP awards in each of those two victories for a Lombardi Trophy. Tom Brady still has night sweats of Eli Manning standing in his way of what would have been his eighth and ninth Super Bowl rings. Of course, moments that will live on forever in Super Bowl history. Eli Manning somehow escaping what should have been multiple sacks and firing it downfield to David Tyree for the helmet catch that still will live in every Super Bowl montage. I can guarantee you are going to see that play at some point this weekend in all the football coverage you are going to consume. It has been the great debate because of those Lombardi trophies. Is Eli Manning a surefire Hall of Famer? I'll say this. He's going to be in Canton. We saw Eric Allen get in his 19th year of eligibility. Eli Manning will be a Hall of Famer. He will have a gold jacket. He will have a bust in Canton, Ohio. First ballot, I guess that's where we come up a little bit short. And Joe, by reports last night, based on the voting that I don't know has been officially released as of this moment, Eli Manning wasn't all that close to being a first ballot Hall of Famer. But go back to the stats, because there's probably not many quarterbacks in NFL history that has half as many Super Bowl championships than they do Pro Bowl appearances. That is really why Eli Manning is going to be in Canton someday when it's all said and done.
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's not hard to imagine in the next year or so Eli's name being called, and ultimately that's what matters, right? Just get the jacket, get in the Hall of Fame. I don't think anybody can argue he's not Hall of Fame worthy. It's just, right, does he get that honor of the first year? And what about Luke Kuechly? I didn't see his name on there either.
Luke Kuechly's going to be there as well. You bet your bottom dollar. Yeah. NBA news from Deadline Day. Next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Deadline day in the NBA. It was yesterday on a Thursday afternoon, 3 p.m. Eastern time. And what will go down as probably one of the more chaotic, dramatic, seismic, important NBA trade deadline weeks in the history of the association. But most of those big splashes and blockbuster moves happened either over the weekend in the early minutes of Sunday and beyond, or on the eve of the actual trade deadline day in the NBA. So the moves yesterday, not nearly as impactful, but a couple of trading places, as you will see there on the screen. Atlanta sends DeAndre Hunter to Cleveland. He'll help out the Cavaliers in their bid to win the Eastern Conference with the NBA's best record at the moment. Back to the Hawks, Caris LeVert, George Niang, and Terrence Mann. The Clippers making some moves as well. The Milwaukee Bucks adding in Hornets and the Suns. Again, Joe, not many moves that are going to move the needle really in a large way based on what we saw during deadline day. Perhaps the biggest news of deadline day, the guys that were not dealt, Kevin Durant, Bradley Beal, they remain in Phoenix. Guys like Miles Turner and a couple of other big men, they remain in their spots as well. As 3 p.m. Eastern time yesterday afternoon came and went, and trade deadline week in the NBA officially comes to a close.
Yeah, and again, at that point, yesterday, the idea that we were going to get anybody with a major salary issue, or, you know, the Kevin Durants of the world, or the Beals, at, you know, with how much money they're making and how you have to fit and land and there has to be equal value. It just, the odds of that happening at that point were kind of slim to none. And really, I think it was more about cleaning up the books for a lot of teams and maybe getting rid of some salary and some of those things. And that's kind of what we saw yesterday at the deadline.
Yeah, absolutely. So a couple of the funnier things, I guess, in the big trades that we saw earlier this week, namely that of Jimmy Butler ending up in Golden State, was the facilitating teams and a couple of those players that everybody knows, P.J. Tucker, Dennis Schroeder, and where they ended up. P.J. Tucker now makes his way, I believe, as I try to track this down, he's headed to Toronto, if I'm not mistaken, or back to Miami. Dennis Schroeder rerouted from Utah to the Detroit Pistons, and Schroeder was bemoaning all that you will see during trade deadline week. The Grizzlies added a couple of pieces, Marvin Bagley III, Johnny Davis, a 2028 second round pick. We saw a rather humorous graphic posted by a certain sports media network talking about the new big two for the NBA's worst team. That's Chris Middleton and Marcus Smart. Smart ends up with the Wizards. What a two-year span it has been for Marcus since being dealt from being down, where he was a part of that contending team for the Celtics. That really is what it comes down to on deadline day in the NBA.
Yeah. Well, actually, can I tell you? I mean, Washington's got actually a pretty halfway decent team right now. Maybe better than what they had prior to the trading beginning here. So this will be interesting to see how this all works out here. I think Milwaukee also getting Kevin Porter Jr. is interesting too, if he can stay out of trouble. That'll be interesting as well.
That's a very big if for Kevin Porter Jr. Washington, by the way, despite winning three consecutive games, still just 9-41, the only team in the NBA with less than 10 wins so far this season. We told you yesterday, put a pin in the NBA championship odds on deadline day, a part of trade deadline week. Not much movement, of course, yesterday, except for the Nuggets and the Lakers separating a little bit. Denver down by a dollar to 14-1. The Lakers move back by $4 at 19-1. Maybe the market just resetting after a hectic and chaotic few days. And the Celtics see their price drop by a couple of cents from a plus 210 number to plus 195. The C's are the reigning NBA champions and have been the betting favorites in a short way all year long. Now the story is the close separation in front of Oklahoma City, the Western Conference's best team. But the reason that seems a little bit funny as of yesterday, Boston didn't really make any moves, and the Celtics got beat as a 12-point home favorite by the shorthanded Dallas Mavericks yesterday, 127-120. And despite that, the C's in the NBA Finals rematch still remain the favorites and see their price even grow shorter to win a second consecutive Larry O'Brien trophy.
Yeah. Kind of interesting that, and even to see Cleveland and DeAndre Hunter, I think was fascinating, because I did not think we were going to see some of these top teams, Ben, like the Celtics, do a whole lot. I mean, their teams have been solidified. What you see is what you get. You weren't really thinking there were going to be anything crazy there. But to me, it feels like the Celtics are just trying to buy enough time, get to the playoffs, and then hopefully flip a switch and make a run, because the market is so overvalued them this year here that if you've been backing them blindly, you've been getting absolutely destroyed betting them and laying any sort of big number with them.
12-point favorite last night. The Celtics have now been booked as a favorite in 49 of 52 games. That's not overly shocking. Boston was the incredibly short Eastern Conference NBA title favorites and, of course, the reigning NBA champs that basically brought everybody back and somehow was thought of getting better year over year. What is surprising, perhaps, is how porous they have been making you profitable. 19-29-1 against the spread this year as a favorite. And Joe, not only a favorite in 49 games, a double-digit favorite in a majority of those 49 games, expected to win 22 of 49. Big victory for the Mavs last night. Klay Thompson filling in a big way. 25-point performance in Beantown. Of course, we are kind of in that stage where all the acquisitions we have seen this week in the NBA, we are waiting for their new debuts. Anthony Davis in Dallas, yet to happen. Of course, for two teams that faced off last night in a California contest in Los Angeles, we are waiting for the debuts of Luka Doncic for LA, Jimmy Butler for Golden State. Both guys in the arena last night at Crypto.com in downtown LA. But in the absence of Luka, as we await Jimmy Butler making his Dubs debut, how about LeBron James and Steph Curry? 42 for LeBron, 37 on the other side for Steph Curry, but it's the Lakers getting the last laugh as LeBron James leads LA to yet another victory, basically single-handedly. 42 points, 17 rebounds, and 8 assists as the Lakers win at home and cover as a 7-point home favorite against Golden State.
Yeah, it was another old-fashioned LeBron versus Steph Curry, which we've seen some great ones over the years. And the battles that they had. I mean, LeBron drops almost 20 in the second quarter. And then we watch Golden State go on this 32-12 run right before halftime. And all of a sudden, the Lakers are like, what just hit us? Well, Steph Curry hit you. That's what happened. But then the second half came, and down the stretch, it was a battle of wills between LeBron at 40 years old versus Steph Curry and who was going to make more shots. And at the end, it was LeBron made a couple of more shots.
The 22nd year of LeBron's NBA career at the age of 40. Of course, that longevity in the incredibly illustrious, historic, and prolific performances throughout LeBron's career, you are going to make many, many accolades in NBA history. But last night, being 40 in scoring 40 has only been done twice in the history of the association. And who are the two guys? Of course, LeBron James and Michael Jordan. And here is the interesting thing about the Lakers, in my estimation, Joe. This was not a team that, like the Warriors, trying to make a flurry of moves to try to be a playoff team. The Lakers are now 30-19 in the 5 spot in the Western Conference. Plenty coming your way from New Orleans. Okay.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
The Super Bowl 59 countdown now stands at only 2. It is our final Football Friday of this 2024 NFL season. Now, on February 7th, 2025, just 2 days away from Super Bowl Sunday in the Big Easy, it is time to head to New Orleans, inside the Media Center, and on Radio Row for Sports Grid's continuing coverage of the biggest game of each and every football season. Our guy, Joe Lisi, with the pride of the Garden State, former Rutgers great and two-time Super Bowl champion, Logan Ryan, yesterday in New Orleans.
Live from Radio Row, Sports Grid's coverage of Super Bowl 59, Joe Lisi joined by two-time Super Bowl champ, Logan Ryan. Logan, great atmosphere here New Orleans, and more importantly, a great game on Sunday.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I was in last year's Super Bowl with the Niners against these Chiefs.
Right.
So I'm rooting for the Eagles in this one, right? That one still hurts. But New Orleans is doing a great job. Everything is really secure. Tons of police and everything. It just seems like people are getting around okay. So I think they're doing a great job hosting it.
When you look at that game last year, you mentioned you were part of the 49ers, and the game goes to overtime, and your defense really stepped up at every given moment, especially in the first half. What makes Pat Mahomes Pat Mahomes, right? And when the game is on the line, people talk about that it factor. Do you see that in terms of, you know, the Chiefs being as dominant as they were even last year and this year, as opposed to when they were a few years ago, maybe with Tyreek Hill and the crew?
Yeah, you kind of mentioned it. I think they're dominant these past 2 years without the amount of talent they had when they had Tyreek Hill. They're less talented than they were, but they're still finding ways to win. And I think that Andy Reid and Spagnuolo and Mahomes do a great job of all game analyzing what's happening, making adjustments to play the perfect fourth quarter. They're the best fourth quarter team in football because no matter how the first half goes, they have a play they haven't ran yet. They have a blitz Spagnuolo might save until the fourth quarter to get off the field. They do really good in the fourth quarter of scoring or converting those first downs to ice the game. And defensively, do a good job of getting your offense off the field like they did to us in overtime. And like they did all these playoffs of kind of winning, beating the Bills in that fourth quarter.
Right, absolutely. And even Philadelphia, you know, they put up 35 points a couple of years ago. Jalen Hurts plays lights out. I think you can make the argument personnel-wise that Philly has better personnel at every level. Do you see that as well in regards to this matchup?
Philly has the better team, no doubt. I mean, the Chiefs have the better quarterback. I would say that. The Chiefs have the better coaching staff. And that's hard to beat when they have that, right? And they have the better tight end. But other than that, you got to give almost everything to the Eagles, right? The better secondary overall, I like McDuffie, but the better secondary overall is the Eagles. And same with the front seven, you know? But those guys in Kansas City, they're not the biggest name players, but they do their job really well. Similar to how the New England Patriots used to do. They do their job really well. They understand what it is. And even if you put up 35 points, I want to know how much the Eagles score in the fourth quarter of that Super Bowl, like we talk about, because the Chiefs just find a way to get that stop, and then you put the ball in Mahomes' hands behind. He finds a way to go come back and win the game, or if he has the lead, he finds a way to not give you the ball back.
People have said that if Mahomes does win his fourth, right, that he would be the best, or modern day, right? And I push back and say, well, the greatest is Tom Brady, that's 1-7. What is your opinion in terms of that breakdown? If Mahomes wins his fourth, would you say he's the best modern-day quarterback that we've seen?
Well, I don't know about when's modern-day start, right? I guess that's the word. No, he's not better than Tom Brady until he has more rings than Tom Brady, in my opinion. Is he on pace? Yes, he's on pace. Is going to 5 Super Bowls in 7 years unheard of right away?
Right.
Absolutely. But to say he's the best because he got his fourth, Tom Brady has 7, and he lost a head-to-head to Tom Brady.
Right.
So I don't put him ahead of Tom Brady, and I have a lot of Tom Brady bias here. I got a couple Super Bowls for the Tom Brady in my answer, but no, he's not ahead of Tom Brady.
Playing in the Super Bowl, right, the weeks of preparation, is there anything that's a little bit different than the regular season, and just in terms of the way maybe you might prep, pregame rituals, anything in that sort?
Everything's different in terms of you have to bring all your family out, and you have to deal with the tickets and logistical nightmare of getting 15, 20, 10 family members in town. Everyone's so excited. Your phone's blowing up. Your third grade gym teacher's got to text you how you knew you would make it. You know, you got to talk to people you haven't talked to or not, right? So you become the face of the, you know, of your everyone you know. You become their life story for these 2 weeks. And then obviously you have to deal with media every day after practice a lot more. So everything is different, and the game itself is different. The TV timeouts are longer. Right. There's more TV timeouts. Every timeout is a 3-minute timeout because they got to get commercials in. Halftime is 30 minutes as opposed to 7.
Right.
So everything about the game, the rhythm's different. So everything about the game is different. It's literally about just trying to play a good play after a good play because there's so much more stoppage in play than you're used to.
When you look back on your Super Bowl moments, what stands out for you? What's the most memorable to you in terms of the Super Bowl?
I mean, I played in the two greatest Super Bowls of all time, in my opinion. My first one was in 2014, the Malcolm Butler.
Right.
Fourth and one, or not fourth and one, but the pick on the one-yard line to change the fate. I mean, we probably had a 99% chance of losing to a 99% chance of winning
right.
in one play. And then the next one was a 28-3 comeback, first overtime ever, largest comeback in Super Bowl history. So anything can happen in the Super Bowl. Like I said, the rhythm's different than normal. So you see some crazy plays. You see some crazy games. A lot of times you hope they come down the wire. And then I was in an overtime loss last year.
Right.
So, I mean, the Super Bowl to me were memorable games. I came out on top a couple times. And I knew going into the game, win or lose, there's no draw. Win or lose, my life's going to change.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Let's head right back to New Orleans, where we continue Sports Grid's coverage of Super Bowl 59. You heard from Logan Ryan, of course, the pride of the Garden State. A guy who plays in the Garden State, that's Tyrone Tracy of the New York Giants. What he had to say about his sensational rookie year in the NFL, and of course, a transition between playing wide receiver at Iowa and then transferring to Purdue, becoming a running back and taking that success into the National Football League. It's one of the beautiful parts about Radio Row at the Super Bowl, getting to talk about all we see in an NFL season. Tyrone Tracy.
Sports Grid here on Radio Row. Kevin Walsh with Giants running back Tyrone Tracy. Tyrone, how are we feeling out here in New Orleans, yeah. Super Bowl week? The energy, I feel, getting a little bit more palpable as the week goes on.
I mean, I feel good. I feel great, man. I'm just enjoying my life right now, off season, so it's a little bit different than end season, so I'm enjoying everything.
Yeah.
I'm excited to be here, man.
How are you first off season after the first year?
Yeah.
How does it feel as opposed to, I guess, when you're going from being, what, a junior to, you know what I mean, in college? How does it feel to be in the off season?
It feels great. It feels great, obviously, going from college to the league.
Yeah.
I've been doing stuff for about over a year now, yeah. You know, just nonstop. So it feels good to actually be able to kick my feet up and not have to, like, you know, go in and do any type of lifting and stuff like that. So I feel good, man. Like I said, I'm happy to be out here. Obviously, we had the Super Bowl, great energy, like you said. So I think it's going to be a good weekend.
Now, for the Giants, right, look, up and down year, obviously.
Yeah.
But when you have that, the bright spots shine bright.
Yeah.
You and Malik, right, I think for Giants fans, like, all right, we got some stuff here that we get to really kind of move forward with. So for you, having the quality of season that you got to have in your rookie year, does that give you guys, and again, Malik's season as well, a big boost now heading into year number two with the organization?
I mean, I guess you could say that, but at the same time, at the end of the day, I think me and Malik were just out there doing our best, you know, for the team.
Yeah.
I think we're going to do the same thing next year. You know, each and every time we have the opportunity to lace up our cleats and step on that grass and play football, we're going to do our best, you know, to put the team in a good position.
Yeah.
I think we made a great step, you know, this past year, just creating trust between players and the coaches and our other teammates.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, we're coming out there to do the same thing next year, you know.
Yeah.
So hopefully, again, we can, you know, obviously add some pieces, but, you know, continue where we left off.
Now, the key, of course, is always going to be, well, one of the keys will be the quarterback position, right? You know, there's a lot of questions right now. You guys have the third pick.
Yeah.
Have you put your eye at all on a Cam Ward or a Shador Sanders, as the Giants maybe could go that direction?
Not necessarily. Obviously, that's above my pay grade. You know, I haven't really, like, watched film, stuff like that. But I trust and have faith in Dave's and Joe to, you know, make the right decision, to be honest with you. Like I told you, man, my job is to go out there and run the ball and protect the quarterback. So whoever they pick to be the quarterback, I'm going to do my job, you know, and make sure that, you know, nobody hits them, you know, when they blitz me. So, and I'm going to try to run the ball the best as I can to make sure that, you know, we keep getting first downs and keep the ball moving.
How did you find blitz pickups in the NFL, maybe compared to college? Was that, I don't know, I've never even, like, thought about that, but is that one of the bigger transitions at all, or is that an area you're super comfortable in?
I think you could say it's a big transition, because it's a different type of players between linebackers in college and linebackers in the league, you know. So obviously, like, yeah, you still have to pick them up, but like the rate that they're coming and the speed, the force, the physicality, the size, like, everything about it is a little bit different when you're talking about college to NFL. So yeah, it's a different mentality when you're talking about the difference between the two. But just from a football IQ standpoint, it's not really big for me per se. Mm-hmm. I had a good running back coach that took his time and to teach me all the details about you know, our protection and how I can get good at it.
Are you were you excited to find out again, because there's a lot of conversations that the Giants are going to kind of try and keep as much continuity as possible, that you get to play under Dable again for another season, and then again that can make things a little bit smoother as you head into year number two?
Yeah, it definitely does, because first and foremost, they chose me, you know, in the fifth round of this past year, knowing that, you know, I've only played the position 1 year, so they kind of took a chance on me. So I want to do the best that I can to make sure that, you know, to let the world know that they chose the right guy, you know, for the job. Obviously I did a good job this past year, but I want more than 1 year, you know, to show that they did good.
Absolutely.
And again, I also think that we have a good team. I really do. I truly believe that we have a good team.
Yep.
And I think that Dave is a great coach. I think he knows how to lead men. And I think that, again, with the right people, right pieces added to what we have, we can get this train going in the right direction.
Hey, it's Austin James. If you're like me, trying to live your best life while living with diabetes, you can relate to worrying if you're doing a good job managing your diabetes. I use the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor to get real-time glucose readings and see the impact of every meal and activity to make better decisions. The FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor can help me live life with diabetes on my own terms, and it gives me more time for the things I love, like being a dad and a musician. Now this is progress. Learn more at FreeStyleLibre.us.
For prescription only, safety info found at FreeStyleLibre.us.